Today is December 20th, 2017, and this is episode number 442 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I've tiptoed to the post office, stepping with care, packages in tow, held up to the air. I've wrapped them all nice and sealed them with wax as I wait for delivery, paid for with taxes. Okay. Maybe I didn't think through that last rhyme all that well.
Well, you get a participation trophy anyhow.
To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show,
including Brian's rhyming,
including my poetry, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com or head to facebook.com/groups/context machine. I'm sorry about the squeaking, by the way. That's me.
All right, hold on. I got to write that down. facebook.com/groups.
Context machine. The slash groups. Slash
context machine.
Yeah. Very nice. I like the scratching of your nib.
Thank you. Expert Foley artists. Top.
And I'm Jeff Gamet, kidney flipper. Ching.
You know,
the whole story there, folks. The whole story.
Yeah, if you ever run into Brian or me in real life, you're totally welcome to ask about the kidney flipper story.
Yes, absolutely. Please do. And again, so I apologize for the squeaking. That's my Ergo Rests, which apparently have just decided to start squeaking.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, so now
that's really cool.
So now they're audiophonic Ergo Rests. You're gonna have to pay more for them now.
Yes. You ever used Ergo Rests?
No. I mean, they squeak.
Well, they're not supposed to squeak. These are like 15 years old.
I've actually seen your Ergo Rests, and they look great. But no, I've never.
No, they look beat up.
Yours
as heck,
look.
But
yours look like they came out of the Star Wars universe. they seem like a great idea. That's what I meant.
Yeah, they clip onto your desk, and it uses a double hinged system to give you these little platforms that you rest your wrists on. And this is the reason why I could still do my job, because otherwise I would be, you know, wallowing in a you know, blaze of carpal tunnel syndrome agony.
That would suck.
Yeah. These have allowed me to do my job for a long time now. And they're 15 years old, which is amazing. I mean, if you think about like how many kilotons of weight have rested on these over 15 years?
That's a really good question.
It's a lot of weight, and they've lasted, but they're starting to squeak, and they do. Anyway, I need to replace them.
After 15 years. Jeez. Yeah. What's up with products these days?
I don't know. It's crazy. All right, so. Did you like that title?
That was a fantastic title.
That's so ridiculous.
We need to work on your rhyming just a little bit.
Rick Allen suggested on our Facebook group.
Uh-huh.
What is it he suggested? He asked us what our thoughts were on Apple.
Do you want me to recite?
Yeah, because I'm not actually looking at it being a top man.
Okay, so here's what Rick said. I propose a topic. What would be a good management structure for Apple? It seems clear to me that the overtly small group they have now that makes decisions is not working well for a company this size. Do we need divisions? Other structure? I would love to talk about this. Well, Rick, since you're not actually on the show with us, we'll have to talk about it for you by proxy.
Yeah, indeed. And it's a really interesting question. It's something I've been thinking about for a while. You know, Steve, so the roots of this question actually go back to Steve Jobs' vision of how a company should work. And his idea for Apple in particular was that it run like a startup, so that you're always nimble enough to change.
Right. You always operate lean.
Lean, right. So you have very few people making decisions. You know, you don't design by committee. You don't market by committee. You don't do anything by committee. You've got people who are empowered to do stuff. And this served Apple so well when Apple was a small, 4, 5, 10, 12, 20 billion, probably even $40 billion a year company. Mm-hmm. You know, when Apple's product line was limited to, first Macs, and then Macs and iPods, and then, like the iTunes store, and then eventually you had the iPhones and iPads. And it's the thing is that I think that one reason why 2016 sucked so badly in terms of new products released, and why Macs have languished so much, is in part because of that management philosophy of having as few people as possible doing things. Because I think there's too many.
I'm inclined to believe with you. To believe you.
You believe with me?
I believe with you. Let's
believe together. That's excellent. Oh, I'm that's touching. And I think Apple has too many balls in the air, too many pies in the oven. I don't know what other kind of metaphors kind of throw in.
Too many clowns in the car.
Too many clowns in the car for all of them to get the necessary attention. I mean, and part of this goes back even to Steve Jobs' day, right? Apple has had this history since Steve came back, and he's of course dead now, but in the time that Steve came back and was at Apple and reshaping it and making it this amazing company, Apple would still release new products and then forget about them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? iTools, .Mac, iWork, iLife.
Mm-hmm.
And today we've got Airport. It's a joke, in my opinion, at this point. It's not keeping up with other products yet, still being sold. Apple Displays went away. The Mac Mini hasn't been updated in years. Of course, we know about the Mac Pro, which is supposedly going to be completely revamped either next year or the year after.
And will most likely ship at the same time as Apple's new display. Apple has said that they've realized that they need to be in the display market.
Okay, well, which is good. But, Apple never should have exited the display market. doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And so there's this long history of Apple doing things, and then for whatever reason, they don't continue to command the attention of that small team that's making all the decisions. And so on the one hand, having that small team has been Apple's greatest strength, because they're nimble. They can, they can focus on whatever it is they decide to focus on. And at the same time, the result is that some products have languished because they don't get the attention.
Yes. And I'm inclined to agree with your hypothesis that we saw so many products languish through 2015 and especially 2016 because Apple was focused on their new campus.
Yep.
That fits nicely with the idea that you have a small group of people, a handful of people, that's managing everything for the company. So you get one big project, like a new spaceship campus, then it makes it really hard for them to focus on other things.
Well, especially when Johnny Ive basically has been focusing on Apple Park, which is why there were two people that were elevated to the vice president level in the design team. Mm-hmm. But we know that Johnny used a lot of that design team over in the development of the Steve Jobs Theater. So it wasn't just Johnny's attention that was over in Apple Park for at least some time, probably months, maybe longer, where the entire design team, probably the best part of the design team was focused on getting the Steve Jobs Theater just right.
And while they were working on that, we were wondering why we're not getting Max.
Right.
And, yeah.
Right. You know, and then so, I mean, it's interesting. Like, you know, I don't want Apple to become like IBM. I don't want Apple to become like Microsoft or, you know, HP. I don't want, or GE even, you know, I like to bring up GE because GE has some 330,000 employees worldwide and they do a fraction of the sales that Apple does.
That's a lot of people.
And Apple has like 117,000 employees and a bunch of those people are retail employees.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I have no idea what the sweet spot is.
But I have an idea.
Okay.
So I think the sweet spot starts with the place that a lot of people are most pissed off with right now, as far as Apple goes, and that's entertainment. What Apple has done is they brought in new people who are managers with the authority to make things happen. And so they can run in a semi-autonomous fashion. I think that what Apple needs to do is adopt that in other parts of their business. So you can still have your top management that's watching over what these highly empowered people will be doing in their divisions, but let those people do their thing. And then that way you can have the media people focusing on media, you can have the Mac team focusing on the Mac, and you can have the iPhone team and iPad team focusing on their thing. And when something really big comes up in one place, it doesn't negatively impact development in the others.
Okay. It's not that simple though.
I know.
All right. For one thing, let's take a little step back. Right. Because Apple started getting into the entertainment business, the content, the original content business
mm-hmm.
with that same small team.
And that worked out pretty poorly, I think.
Yeah. The Planet of the Apps and Carpool Karaoke.
Yeah. You know how Carpool Karaoke has been my my guilty pleasure?
Mm-hmm.
After I saw the Cyrus Family episode,
mm-hmm.
I never got around to watching anymore. It stopped being my guilty pleasure.
Yeah, fair enough.
Boy, funny. Billy Ray Cyrus looked like he was really uncomfortable being part of that show.
You know, yeah, I love Tim Cook, and I think Tim Cook's been an amazing CEO in very many, but not all respects. I blame him for Carpool Karaoke.
Carpool Karaoke, I think, could have been something very different than what we got. And I'm willing to blame Tim Cook as well. And I think that supports my idea that you need to have the specialized people running these different aspects of Apple and then let the high-level executives, Tim Cook and Phil Schiller, Eddie Q, those people, Johnny Ive, they get to oversee the big picture and make sure that the people under them are staying on task.
Yeah. And I, for the record, specifically, the issue was that Tim Cook wanted the potty mouth words removed from the show. And that was the source of the delay. At least that's the rumor.
And
right? There was a multi-month delay after Carpool Karaoke was announced before it actually aired.
Yeah. And I think, after seeing what we saw, I think the problem is twofold. First, Tim Cook may have been saying, all right, no potty words. But I think the other part was when they started running episodes in front of test audiences, they didn't play well. And so they had to go back and re-edit the whole series.
Yeah. All right. So,
that's why Tim shouldn't have been in charge of Apple's entertainment.
Okay, and here's where he gets credit, because he hires Jamie Ehrlich and Zach Van Amberg from Sony Pictures.
Yes, or Sony and TV. That was exactly the right thing to do. Get the people that have the knowledge, the skills, the inspiration, the drive to take that part of the business and just run with it and make it really successful. So find the people that can do that with the other parts of what Apple has going on. And the next thing you know, we have these amazing Macs where our biggest complaint is, well, Apple's releasing computers too fast. I can't upgrade that often. And I would rather hear people complain about that than have them complain about, why am I paying full price for a Mac Mini that hasn't been updated in 3 years?
Okay, but we're still not looking at the whole picture.
Of course not.
Because Tim was smart enough to hire Jamie Ehrlich and Zach Van Amburg, and he gave them a budget, and he gave them the power to do what they need. So what have they done? They've hired lots of executives from the TV business to handle all the things that executives in the TV business need to handle. And they have signed, that we know of, three big shows. There's Amazing Stories by Steven Spielberg. There's a dramedy with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. And there's the new sci-fi space drama from Ronald D. Moore.
Oh, so say we all.
Yeah, so we all. Can't wait for that. It's going to be great. And they're, you know, they're just getting going, right? So all this is great. But note that this power is happening in an area that's not directly connected to Apple's other product lines. It's connected to Apple services, right? But this is where things start getting tricky for Apple to just start empowering, you know, like separate divisions of people. Because one of the great strengths of Apple's product lines, its hardware product lines, is that Macs and iPads and iPhones are all closely related.
And this is where Tim needs to keep his master team that he's working with right now close at hand. So they can be working on the big picture, and then they have the people under them executing. So that they're not... Okay.
There's more. Because...
If you order now...
In addition to the existing product lines that all work closely together, and again, that's one of the the biggest strengths that Apple's hardware products have. You know, software all works very closely hand in hand. You know, the like on the iPhone, for instance, the chips are, you know, the chips are working very, very closely with the software, and Apple is doing things with power management that no other company can do, and that's all great. But now we've also got the car project, which is going to someday the car project is going to be something. I don't know if it's going to be a car. It's going to be something, though. That whole convergence of what Tim Cook said that was really interesting, which is self-driving cars, ride sharing. Thank you. Ride sharing and electric vehicles. Right. So that's a product, and you kind of want those to be talking with your Macs and your iPhones too, in one way or another.
Yes,
but wait, there's more, because Apple is also working on the non-invasive glucose monitoring, which is going to be a very, very huge thing, and certainly that's really important for Apple Watch and also for iPhone, because Apple Watch and iPhone work so closely together. So we have we have Apple expanding in areas where it is important that these people are all working together. And then Apple is expanding in this other place where they don't need to worry about them working together, which is the content business.
Right. So you have to start somewhere.
You do have to start somewhere. And I like what we're seeing in content. I like that Apple is hiring all these executives and they're making things happen and they're making deals happen. And that's great. They clearly are empowered to do stuff. And I want to see a structure for Apple that is going to result in new Macs. Like every 9 months. I want every 9 months to a year, I want new Macs. All the Macs. I want all the Macs updated every 9 to 12 months. I do.
Okay. And okay, so here's what I see. We have a situation where Apple could empower people to really run with projects, but they also need to make sure that there's this incredible communication and cohesion between all of these different parts of the company so that we don't lose the tight integration between the software and the hardware or the hardware platforms. So that's a tricky thing right there. But Apple is a really innovative company, and they've shown that they're willing to take risks over the years. So I'd like to think that if any company could find the right balance between giving more managers control over what's happening, or at least authority to make things happen, and then balance that with making sure that we still have the tight cohesion, I'd like to think that Apple could do that.
That's it. Well, yeah, if anybody can, it would be Apple. But that's where the trickiness is going to hinge.
Well, you say that's the crux of the whole matter. It could be Apple, and I'm not so quick to agree with you on that, because Apple's corporate structure has been, you have a small handful of people managing everything, and you run tight, you run lean, and that's been their lifeblood for so long. It might actually be really hard for Apple to change that.
You get it right. Yeah.
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 But I'd still like to think Apple could make that happen.
Yeah. I hope so, because that's going to be the path forward to Apple continuing to grow. Now, remember, part of my thesis, and we've talked about a lot of this stuff before. I don't think we've ever had this conversation anywhere, but we've talked about a lot of these, a lot of these elements of this conversation have come up in other conversations. Mm-hmm. Part of my premise here is that Apple has a responsibility with all this money, more than $200 billion in cash. Mm-hmm. Apple has a responsibility to do something with it. Now, this is actually a responsibility in a couple of ways. One is an actual fiduciary responsibility to the shareholders. Apple has a legal commitment to maximize shareholder returns, right? So mm-hmm. Apple has to grow or give the money to shareholders. And Apple's been giving a crap ton. Apple just can't give the money to shareholders fast enough. They've given tens and tens of billions of dollars back to shareholders in the form of stock buybacks and dividends, and they just can't do that fast enough. So Apple has to grow, which frankly means more product lines. I mean, like, Apple is the tiniest company to do. I mean, well, first of all, it is one of the biggest planets on the company, and it's the most valuable planet.
It's one of the biggest planets on the company.
Yeah, thank you. It's one of the biggest companies on the planet, and it's one of the biggest companies on the planet, and it's the most valuable company, public company on the planet. And in order to make that bigger, that means Apple doing more, right? I mean, Apple's not going to turn the, you know, Mac into 100 million units a year. That's not going to happen. Apple's not going to turn the iPhone business into, you know, into a billion units a year. That's not going to happen either. So that means more products. It means getting into new areas. It means doing things like delivering content to, you know, to increase the value of its ecosystem. It means doing more, and that means more people. And the trick for Apple is to balance its predilection and desire to be lean with the ability to scale. And so far, they've demonstrated a difficulty in scaling. Give credit where to John Key for that. He was the one that first identified that.
Yep. And I think he nailed it. It's this to me looks like Apple's Achilles heel. It doesn't necessarily have to be.
No. It's a weakness. I wouldn't call it. It's not Apple's Achilles heel unless Apple fails. Okay.
To be Apple's Achilles heel.
Ooh. Okay, I'll accept that.
All right. Man, you make it so hard to be hyperbolic sometimes.
I am pedantry man.
Mostly.
Right. So, let's see here. We've got the thing. Oh, so what's this business today?
Oh, the business.
What's the story coming out of Bloomberg?
Okay. So the story out of Bloomberg today has a lot of people freaking out and other people, quite happy. So the story is insider sources have told Bloomberg that Apple has a new thing called Project Marzipan, and Project Marzipan is an initiative to create a way for developers to be able to create code that's for iOS and macOS. So you would write your code, and from that code, you now have an iOS app for iPhone, iPad, and you also have a macOS app for the Mac. And so when you crank out your app for sale, then if it's going to iOS, it has the iOS necessary elements. So the UI would have the touch interface elements. When you roll out the Mac version, then the interface elements are designed for a traditional keyboard, mouse, and trackpad. And so some people are looking at this and freaking out, thinking that this means that Apple's going to a unified platform where the Mac would basically kind of disappear because it would get blended into the iOS space. And other people are looking at this and saying, holy crap, it's about time, because this makes developers' jobs easier.
Blah, blah, blah. Bonk, bonk on the head. Bonk, bonk. Bonk, bonk.
Are we going to have to leave you on the planet with sores consuming your body and brain?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because I'm a grump.
Okay. So what has you all being a grump?
I think it wasn't grump.
No, it's grup.
Are you sure about that?
I am certain it's a grup, because it's a contraction of grown up.
Yeah, but I always heard that. I heard that N or that M in the middle of that.
Oh, you needed better speakers on your television.
Do you remember the name of the episode?
No, but the girl's name is Miri.
With Miri. By the way, I typed star episode with Miri, and I found it.
Of course it did, because Google's freaky.
Yeah, it's called What Little Girls Are Made Of.
Ah, yes.
Right. So, let's see. Little Girls Are Made Of... not snails. This is important stuff here, folks.
Yeah.
This is important. Wikipedia. Okay, here we go. Got adults. Oh, they don't have the slang. All right. Anyway, whatever it is, someone correct one of the two of us. It's either grump, or grup.
It's a grup.
I suspect you're right, but I'd still like to know, because, you know, Brian. All right. So, first things first, I've long wondered why the crap we can't run iOS apps on our Macs, like in a window.
Mm-hmm. And part of what I was thinking about Marzipan initially was that this would be, in a way, sort of like Rosetta.
Right.
But I'm less inclined to think that now.
Yeah, I am too.
I've had a few hours to think it over.
I don't think this is about making the Mac go away. I think this is actually about bringing more apps to the Mac and making it easier for developers to develop for both.
What I
worry about is the almost necessary dumbification of Mac apps.
So, in what way do you feel the apps would have to be dumbificated?
Dumbificated. I like that. So iOS apps are, by their very definition and purpose, they're simpler. They're designed for a finger to, you know, smash down on buttons and things like that, right? Or maybe an Apple Pencil to, you know, do something a little more refined. And Jean-Louis Gasset had his Monday note from this week talked about this, where he notes that macOS is designed for pixel level manipulation with a mouse, and that iOS is by necessity designed for a much more brute force kind of manipulation, because you're stabbing with your fingers instead of a pixel level pinpoint with a mouse.
That's an interesting observation.
And so he argued in that piece. That piece was all about, and you'll see why I suggested we include this, by the way, in this topic. That piece was actually about convergence to toaster fridges.
Ah, okay.
So he says that he doesn't think that the Mac will gain iPad like abilities and this is all about the toaster fridge, this whole thing where, you know, Apple has been on record as saying toaster fridges are bad, and then turns around and releases accessories for the iPad that make them kind of toaster fridges. Not toaster fridges, but kind of closer to toaster fridges. I'm talking about the accessory and the pencil. I'm sorry, the keyboard, the smart keyboard and the pencil.
Words. They're hard sometimes, aren't they?
They're really, really difficult sometimes. And
it's like being the best planet on the company.
I just erased that, so no one knows I said that.
Perfect.
Excellent. So, and he says instead that he thinks that the iPad will gain more and more Mac-like functionality. He thinks that that'll be the direction that Apple goes in this theoretically inevitable path towards convergence of toaster fridges.
Yeah, I'm inclined to believe with him on the path.
Believing with him. Like this. Yeah. Is that a Missouri thing? Or is that just the Jeffism today?
You know, is
that just what the kidney flipper does?
It's what the kidney flipper does. Here's the deal.
Fair enough.
I'm making fun of your inability to string words together into coherent sentences because I'm projecting. Because
bonk, bonk on the head.
Because I can't do it today. I had a horrible time putting words together in the right order on daily observations today, and I'm just carrying that through here and making fun of you for my inability to create sentences. Although, best planet on the company, that one was pretty funny.
Yeah.
All right, so what I'm trying to say, and I can't wait to hear it. Fun fact, by the way.
Quick fun fact.
Okay.
GDAX, which is Coinbase's Bitcoin trading platform, has a volume for Bitcoin Cash, which is the brand new thing. We're going to talk about this later, but I'm interjecting this now because I just noticed it. And because, you know, Brian, shiny. They've had $199 million in the last 24 hours, which really actually is since in the last 2 hours and 46 minutes.
That's crazy.
So anyway, just a brief exchange. And you know, we're going to get to this in a few minutes and we'll see where the volume is at that point.
Yeah, we'll also see how both of our sentences actually come out. It's going to be an adventure. Okay, so what I'm trying to say, what I'm still attempting to say, that's probably more accurate, is that I think we will see the flow of technology from Mac to iPad more than we will see from iPad to Mac. So I agree with Jean-Louis Gasset in that sense.
Yes. Likewise.
But I'm not seeing a toaster fridge happening, like a full-on toaster fridge. I'm not seeing that for quite a while.
Well, that's where I wonder this unified app thing. So I am worried about Mac apps being dumbed down. I'm worried about people making iOS apps and then
just slapping a Mac interface on them
and slapping the ability to click instead of tap, because that will result in dumbed down apps. At the same time, it could result in tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or maybe a million new apps being available for the Mac, including, you know, a lot of useless games, perhaps, maybe dedicated, you know, there's a lot of things that we don't particularly need, but there are all kinds of, can you imagine doodle jump on a Mac would probably not work.
Oh my God.
That doodle jump, by the way, is going into my must-have app list that Andrew's working on for us.
Oh, sweet.
Because doodle jump.
It is a pretty fun little app.
Yeah, it's a, you gotta have Doodle Jump. But you know, Doodle Jump is probably not going to do anything on the Mac. But there are all kinds of interesting and useful apps that would be good on the Mac. But at the same time, we don't want the sophistication of the Mac to be dumbed down on the whole for before a touch interface.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So I'm interested to see where that goes. I'm interested to see, you know, what Apple does to prevent that from happening, because I don't think Apple wants that to happen. And remember, folks, Apple still needs Macs to make iPads and iPhones and yes. Apple Watches and non-invasive glucose monitoring and CAD software to design the Apple Car with. All right. I mean, this
and movie special effects rendering.
Yes. Right. Apple is not going to be getting rid of the Mac anytime soon.
No, they're not. So on the dumbing down of apps, my guess is that this will happen, but I don't think it'll happen whole scale, because there will be some developers who see low hanging fruit. You know, I click the one button for Mac, I click the one button for iPhone and iPad, and score, I've just doubled my app count. Right. But there's a lot of developers that have to let one platform suffer, meaning it can't get the updates as quickly as it should, because they have to focus on the platform where they have the most users, where they're making the most money, you know, whatever it is. They have a reason that they see as valid for focusing on iOS or macOS for their apps. If have the ability to create a common code base for their apps and then do the updates there and then push out for the platforms, then I think we have a much higher likelihood of seeing update parity and in some cases apps where they wouldn't have been before.
That could well be. Companies like the Omni Group will make the most of this.
Oh, yeah.
Smile Software.
Yep.
Right. These companies that are heavily invested in both Mac apps and iOS apps and make great products for both. Companies like that will make the most of this. And that'll be a great thing, I think.
Yeah, I'd like to see a company like Readle run with this.
Readle will do great things with this. The Mac Fun will do great things with this.
Mm-hmm.
Adobe will go. No, I'm just kidding. that's not going to happen.
That was funny.
That's not going to happen. Microsoft might do something really good with this.
Sure. I could see Microsoft coming up with some clever, uses for Marzipan.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think that there is far more potential for value than there is inherent risk in this for us as Mac users in particular. For people who are only iPhone users, none of this matters. It won't affect them. For those of us who are Mac users, especially those of us who are Mac users first and foremost, which I don't actually really, is that the case for either of us?
I would say we are Mac users first and foremost because we spend so much time sitting at our desk every day
for our work,
writing and podcasting.
Right. Right. All right. So for those of us who are first and foremost Mac users, we're going to end up getting some additional options, I think. And that'll be a good thing. That'll be a good thing.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of this whole Marzipan thing. And my guess is if Apple intends to move forward with this soon, which it sounds like they are, that we'll learn about it at WWDC 2018, and then this will roll out as part of Apple's developer tools for the next macOS and iOS releases, so next fall.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be reasonable for Mark Gurman, and Mark Gurman over at Bloomberg broke this. Mm-hmm. So for him to have gotten a hold of it, it probably means some external developers were exposed to this stuff, maybe. But for him to be exposed to it at this point, the time frame you just laid out is the most logical versus a longer time frame.
Yeah. So I think WWDC 2018 is going to be an interesting event for us.
It is. And WWDC 2017 was also extremely interesting.
It was.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff happening. So, you know, it's nice to see. Nice to see Apple doing interesting things, even if they left the doors, even if they redesigned the iMac Pro to look exactly like the iMac 5K, but with fewer doors. Even if they did that, it's nice to see Apple firing, not necessarily on all cylinders. That's kind of
a sore point for you, isn't it?
It really is. Dude, they had to go to the effort. Listen, the iMac Pro is anodized with a different color, space gray. It otherwise looks
so sexy.
As sexy as can be. It otherwise looks exactly like the iMac 5K.
Mm-hmm.
Except for they went to the effort to make new dies, to make the back of that thing without doors to replace the RAM. They spent extra money to make that thing not have doors.
I know how to make you feel a lot better about this. It turns out the Mac Pro's, the iMac Pro's RAM is upgradable.
Seriously. Yes, but there's no doors to get to it. You're going to have to split the case to do it. I'm glad that it's upgradable. That's great. That's wonderful, but there's no doors to do it. You have to split the case, which is probably going to void your warranty, even if you have Apple do it.
Oh, not if Apple does it. It's part of Apple's plan. If you want to have a RAM upgrade, you take it into Apple. They pop the case and put the RAM in. So
great.
Yeah. So the only legit way to upgrade the RAM in an iMac Pro from Apple's perspective is you have to take your iMac into Apple and pay them
and pay Apple's price for a RAM. That's great. That's fantastic.
I knew that would make you feel better.
Oh, yeah. I just feel tons better about that. And they went to extra expense to do this. Rather than leveraging existing dies to just use the same backs that they use on the iMac 5K, they went to the extra expense of designing new backs that don't have doors.
See, Apple is all about the details.
Okay. All right.
Deep breath.
So, listen, there's been a lot going on in the world of Bitcoin. I am personally, you know, fascinated with cryptocurrencies.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that maybe we could talk about that. What do you think?
I think that sounds like a really good idea because there's been the sharp rise in Bitcoin value. And now we have this thing with like a Bitcoin exchange thing that just opened and prices went crazy with that. And
that's close.
I think it's all a little confusing and I would love some help sorting that out.
All right. So the news this week is that Bitcoin Cash, that's a separate cryptocurrency.
Okay, so we have Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash.
Yeah, we also have Bitcoin Gold, Bitcoin United, and Bitcoin Core.
Oh, for the love of porgs.
You know, but whatevs. Those other ones so far don't matter. These were all created from forks.
And the forks, this is something that happened, several months ago? When
August 1st was when Bitcoin Cash split off.
Okay. And so that was from the thing where the people that were like really deep into Bitcoin mining and management were trying to figure out how the system should be working moving forward for mining the Bitcoin and managing the Bitcoin. Am I right?
Yeah. So that's pretty close. The Bitcoin as a platform has some severe shortcomings. It's failing to scale, and it's not Tim Cook's fault.
Well, I bet that's letting Tim sleep easy at night.
So what I mean by that is, so Bitcoin is built on what's called a blockchain, and a blockchain is a chain of blocks, and each block has the details of every transaction on the network. And okay. That blockchain gets built one block at a time. And every time you find a new block, every time the people who are running computers that do the math find a new block, they get rewarded in Bitcoins. And that's called Bitcoin mining. And then the new Bitcoin block at that point is part of the chain. And
so now you have more Bitcoin in circulation.
Now you have a little bit more Bitcoin in circulation, but you also have the records contained in that block enshrined in the blockchain for everyone to see forever and ever. Amen.
Okay. So at that point, it's like, this is certified money.
Right.
Because
technically it actually needs to be a transaction needs to be part of 100 blocks before it's officially forever and ever. Amen.
Okay. But
in practice, if a transaction makes it into one block, I don't know that it ever has not made it into other blocks, but if that's ever been the case, it's, you know, like, you know, the exceptions are staggeringly small.
Yeah. Okay. So because of these limitations, there was debate about how all of this math ultimately needs to be handled.
Blocks on Bitcoin are limited to 1 megabyte. And there's only so much data you can put in 1 megabyte. And the problem is that Bitcoin has become so popular that 1 megabyte can't hold all of the transactions. So those transactions start stacking up. And sometimes it can take a day or two for a transaction to be recognized by the network. This is a problem.
That's a real problem.
It has a worse effect because there are small fees that go with every block, with every transaction to pay the miners to do the math that keeps the network honest. And because miners have more than enough transactions to choose from, right? Normally a miner wants to get every transaction it can into that block because it's going to get all of those fees if they find it.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Okay. So now there's more blocks to choose from than will fit in the block. So what happens is that miners set their hardware to prioritize transactions that have higher transaction fees.
So lower transaction fees, probably a lower transaction overall, that gets pushed to the bottom of the list. And that's why you end up potentially with delays of hours or days before the transaction
is processed. You're actually even in danger of having a transaction just, you know, go orphaned and never being recognized. That's a problem too. But so what that means is that the transaction fees keep getting pushed up higher and higher because people who are especially moving around large quantities of Bitcoin, they're going to be willing to pay. If they need to move Bitcoin fast, they're going to be willing to pay these higher transaction fees. So Bitcoin has gone from something that is supposed to cost you, you know, fractions of a penny to send Bitcoin from one person to another, to it costing dollars.
Oh, wow.
Dollars and dollars. And that makes it not cheap at all. And that means that it doesn't have any kind of, that's one advantage over a bank that it no longer has. This is a problem. So there have been all kinds of ways to combat this that have been proposed by the mining community. And by the engineers and the mining community, the engineers who formed the development team.
Okay.
And, you know, Bitcoin is open source, so, you know, lots of people can propose and things get voted on and miners essentially get to vote because they're the ones with the responsibility of forcing this stuff. So one camp, there were a couple of camps, actually, I guess there were three camps, and like one of them wanted to do this one thing and one of them wanted to do this other thing. And then one group, what they wanted to do was they wanted to increase the block size to 8 megabytes. Mm-hmm. Which would allow a lot more transactions to go through, which would bring transaction costs down and make everything faster like it's supposed to be. And they put forth this proposal, but only some miners bought into it, and the rest of them stayed with the core development team.
And then Bitcoin is forked.
Yeah. So with, you know, like, we want this, we want this, we want this, we want to get the two camps warring at each other. So they said, fine. We'll meet on August 1st when a certain block is found, and when that block is found, may the best protocol win.
Okay.
Right. So that time comes along. Some of the Bitcoin mining community goes with this new 8 meg block version, and they call that Bitcoin Cash.
Okay.
And everybody else stays with the original Bitcoin. And we now have what is called a fork, and we have two cryptocurrencies. As of that certain block, they have identical chains, but everything going forward becomes different.
Okay. So, following Bitcoin Cash from August 1st forward, it's its own independent thing.
Right. And if you had Bitcoin at that moment, as of the fork, you would then have an equal amount of Bitcoin Cash.
Okay. So, in that sense, a lot of people suddenly had double the Bitcoin.
Right. Which it wasn't double the value because Bitcoin Cash first started being traded in like, you know, the $200 to $800 range.
Right.
And then it actually sank, and it sank down, and it looked like it might actually go away for a little while, but then came roaring back pretty strongly the closer we got to Coinbase announcing that they would support it.
Okay, so your Bitcoin and your Bitcoin Cash are gaining or losing value independently of each other because they're on these different paths, and Bitcoin Cash got goosed because it got this new I guess endorsement, in a manner of speaking.
It is kind of an endorsement, yeah. And it got two of them in pretty quick succession. Blockchain.info, which is an online wallet service, they announce full support for Bitcoin Cash. So basically, you can use their online wallet to send and receive and store Bitcoin Cash. And alongside Ethereum and Bitcoin, which they also still support. Of course, they still support it.
Of course.
And Coinbase, this is important because Coinbase is located in San Francisco. And they have some limited cooperation with the IRS, right? If you move, I think, $20,000 on and off Coinbase, you're going to get reported to the IRS.
I'm sure that makes
just FYI
the United States government happy.
Yeah, it does. Actually, the IRS wanted every record. They wanted every single person's account information, and Coinbase fought them in court. This was recently decided, and the compromise ended up being the $20,000 mark. So if you're not getting automatically reported to the IRS, of course the IRS could subpoena anybody they wanted.
Sure.
The records for anybody that wanted. Anyway, the point is Coinbase is a US-based exchange. There are a lot of exchanges based in other parts of the world. Some of them are sketchy as can be. But Coinbase is based in the US, and it's subject to US law. And it is the closest thing to an officially recognized exchange in the US. There's a couple of other US exchanges, but Coinbase is the biggest one. And they've got an online wallet service and an exchange. And then they own a trading platform at GDAX.com, GDAX.com. That's used by a lot of traders, and they do Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin. And then as of yesterday, they surprise announced support for Bitcoin Cash too.
Okay. So now what went down and why when they did that announcement?
Well, a cluster bleep, went down is what happened. So they, a bunch of people. It looks like what happened is this. Okay, there's a couple of things. First of all, Coinbase announced an internal probe into insider trading because Bitcoin Cash started edging up in the 24 hours prior to Coinbase announcing this.
Oh, and that doesn't seem right.
It doesn't, and it because Coinbase and regulations here are, you know, anywhere sketchy to non-existent. Because cryptocurrencies are not a regulated market yet. But Coinbase tries to be on the up and up about everything. And of course, their internal policies prohibit employees from profiting off of insider knowledge, and also prohibits them from telling their friends and family.
This seems like a good policy.
It is. It's a great policy. It's a fantastic policy. And they're also not allowed to trade, I think, in anything, I think, like 72 hours before any kind of an announcement. They're not allowed to trade in anything that's being announced. So, but someone knew something, because Bitcoin Cash went from 1800 to like 2300. And then Coinbase actually made the announcement, and Bitcoin Cash on Coinbase, or on GDAX actually, jumped up to $9,500.
Holy crap.
While it was trading everywhere else in the world, because there were other exchanges, much smaller exchanges, that had been trading it since, you know, since its August 1st debut. Right.
Wow. Okay.
So they were trading at the $3,300 to $3,500 range, and it jumps up to $9,500 on Coinbase. And that appears to be, we don't know for sure, but what appears to have happened is this. A lot of people put market orders, and what a market order is buy or sell at the current price. That's called a market order.
Okay.
Okay. There are also limit and stop orders. And I honestly, I get confused at what stop orders are, but what limit orders are is buy or sell for this price. So if the price hits this level, go ahead and buy or sell at that point.
Okay.
So what happens with the brand new market is there are no limit orders. There's no depth. There's no liquidity. Right. So when you had a bunch of people putting in these market orders, they gobbled up what few sell orders there were. And just the price just went like, you know, sort of almost like automatically. Well beyond what anyone else thought the Bitcoin Cash was worth. And keep in mind, by the way, the most of this value for Bitcoin Cash is speculative at best. Mm-hmm. And Bitcoin Cash isn't accepted anywhere that I know of for transactions. I mean, Bitcoin itself is accepted in lots of places, including Expedia and Overstock.com, and I know of a bullion site that accepts Bitcoin. There are places you can spend Bitcoin. I don't know of any place you can spend Bitcoin Cash. So, yeah, there's a lot of speculative value in Bitcoin Cash that's happening here. Just, you know, also I have a tiny, tiny, tiny positions in all of this stuff, and it doesn't affect what I'm going to say about any of them at any point, at any time.
You know, I think, I have a Bitcoin wallet? Because, yeah, I think you helped me set one up once.
I did help you set one up years ago.
That means I have a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a Bitcoin.
I don't think you ever actually got any Bitcoin, though.
I thought I had,
I think you set up a wallet, and then you did, like, a claim or two on a Bitcoin faucet, but you never did.
Oh, so I may not even have anything. So, yeah, which shows you how deep I've gone into Bitcoin. I just remembered I have a wallet, and I don't even know if there's anything in it.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. Well, that was a great investment for me.
Wasn't yeah, you should check. You should check. Well, it didn't cost you anything.
That's true. So I may have like $5.
You may. You don't, but you may. It's like Schrodinger's box, but we know the dog is dead.
Oh. Is the cat still alive?
The cat. Right. The cat's dead. So anyway, GDAX / Coinbase immediately halted trading, and they launched an internal probe into these to insider trading to make sure their employees are on the up and up, and they promised to fire anybody and possibly, you know, but fire them and, you know, anything that they need to legally against anyone who engaged in insider trading. They reopened trading this morning. At 9 p.m., actually, they reopened orders. So you could put in orders for limit buys and sells, but they didn't actually start actual transactions until 11 a.m., and the market has been pretty up and down since then.
Wow.
So let's look at it. Matter of fact, it's up to 4150 as of this recording, 68,567 and counting Bitcoins cash have traded hands. That would be a, let's see, 68,590 now times 4200. Looks like $288 million in Bitcoin cash have traded hands in the last 3 hours and 13 minutes.
And that's all for a cryptocurrency that you can't use anywhere else yet.
Right. All for a cryptocurrency that was created on August 1st. So, you know, this stuff could be like bubblicious. You know, I'm not advising anyone to buy or sell. I don't know what to do at this point with any of these cryptocurrencies. Bitcoin itself is down from a high of like 19.8 over the weekend. It's currently trading at 15,940 on GDAX. Ethereum is down to 780, but that's actually, you know, way up over the last few weeks. Even that $16,000 price from Bitcoin is way, way, way up, you know, like month over month. Litecoin is down to 298, which is also up on the grand scheme of things.
Wow. All this for what, at this point, we can really call pretend money.
Magic internet money, I think is the phrase you're looking for.
Yes, magic internet money. Wow. Okay.
Magic internet money.
All right. I feel like I have a better idea of what's going on with this whole Bitcoin Cash thing now.
Yeah, kind of. I don't really have a better idea of what's going on with Bitcoin Cash.
Before our conversation, I had very little information to work with, and now I have more. So I'm going to call that a win.
All right. Well, that's good. And hopefully I answered questions. I certainly get a lot of questions about cryptocurrencies these days. Like, you know, you hear, you know, people that live in New York who like are on the subway and they hear people talking about mortgaging their houses and buying Bitcoin. And listen, I'm not offering any investment advice, but I know that I would not be mortgaging my house to buy a cryptocurrency. And I love cryptocurrencies.
I'm with you.
That is such a huge, that's an insane risk in my opinion. But yeah. You know, whatever, to each their own. Oh, and Bitcoin Cash is down to 4,000 from 4,200 a few minutes ago.
Oh, there you go.
But we're also up to 70,600 having been traded. So it is a highly volatile market right now.
So to all of you people that bought at 8,500 yesterday, happy Wednesday.
Yeah, I'm hoping that wasn't actually very many people because there simply weren't any Bitcoins for sale. So, I don't know. It does stink for those folks.
Yeah, it does.
But, you know, don't stick a market order into a market with no liquidity.
That seems like a reasonable thing.
You know, and a lot of this comes from the fact that these markets are unregulated. So, I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that's going on. By the way, I just watched 52 Bitcoin Cash change hands.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, 13. Big sell off. 39. Yep. 25, 50, 42. Wow. There's so much money changing hands right now. There is so much money changing hands.
That's
so there you have it.
All right.
If you have any questions, hop on to facebook.com/contextmachine. Oh, goodness gracious. What is it?
facebook.com/groups/contextmachine.
/groups/contextmachine. Hop on over there. Feel free to ask questions. Make comments. Let us know what you think in general. We'd appreciate it. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely looking eagerly forward to thoughtful critiques of my opening poetry.
Oh yeah. That's man, you're going to kill at the Silicon Valley Poetry Slam.
my God. Oh, that sounds awful.
Yeah, it really does.
One, two. You're not the boss of me, man. I won't take your binary. Man, I'm quantum. Pow.
Yeah.
I meant 01. Damn it. Messing up my own joke. Golly gosh darn.
All right. Well, we're out of time, so I guess we'll just end with your bad joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
Stay subscribed, please.
I don't know. Maybe we won't. Well, we'll be over at the Mac Observer. Hopefully we'll see you there.
Yes, I think that sounds great.